Take two.
You're lucky I toned it down.
Please do. First of all, you say take two. Nobody knows there was a first take.
So this is take like 17. You don't know.
Lord, you're have getting mercy.
A, getting a look behind the curtain, Johnners. Yeah, you don't want to see how the sausage is made, people.
It's ugly back here. Welcome to the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your incredibly sick host, Pat Leslie Mack, and I'm joined as always
by a turned up, very white guy.
Too turned up, and you are very white indeed.
I told you, I don't know why. I just feel like, for me, podcasting, I'm only going to do it if I'm on 11. That might be a problem for you.
When are you not on 11? I haven't encountered that time yet. When you're sleeping? I mean,
Wednesday's at about 3 a.m.
The fuck? Anyways, if you're just listening to us for the first time, you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can always also find us on our website, interracialjohn.com. And, of course, we're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr. Again, at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And we have just returned from a quick four-day sojourn to the...
Scouting.
The Midwest.
What do you call it? A scouting visit? A little bit, like a scouting
beer
trip?
Beer capital of the world. No, well, just the country, actually. Beer City.
Beer City.
Grand Rapids, Michigan. Shout out to GR. What's
per
up?
Per capita. I brought beer back.
You did?
I always do. Got to bring the beer.
Had a great couple of days. A little R&R. Didn't really do much. Saw our friends. Played with some babies. Cooked some food. Saw Wanda Sykes live. Yeah. That was really good. They have this great thing called Laugh Fest. That was really fun.
They ate a lot of breakfast.
Dude,
I'm not a big breakfast person.
They do not play
they put
with
their
the breakfast.
Fucking foot into breakfast up in Michigan.
It's like breakfast. They have an entire echelon, like a whole tier of restaurant that's only open for breakfast and like part of lunch.
Like 6 a.m. to like 2.
1.
Yeah, 1:32.
Like they don't even really do late lunch.
Yeah.
It's like breakfast and like...
There's a whole...
If you make it in, you can get
New Beginnings is a chain. There's like four or five of those
things. I'm telling
you, man. New Beginnings.
We didn't play around. We hit up the West Sider. We got to...
And you know, not only... Not to get back to breakfast, but not only do they do breakfast, but like...
Wolfgang's. We made it to Wolfgang's.
I ordered a bacon, egg, and cheese sandwich. And like, you know, it's a pretty standard...
Standard breakfast
fried eggs, some bacon, and some, you know, on whatever. It was three fucking giant pieces of like Texas style toast. It was the biggest breakfast sandwich. It might have had three fried eggs, like five or six strips of bacon. It was crazy.
That was absurd. We had I had a grilled cinnamon roll.
That was delicious though.
With icing.
That was delicious though.
It was ridiculously good.
Yeah. Hopefully he's going to be anonymous, but his nom de plume, the Smothered episode, right?
Smothered.
Smothered.
It's not going to be episodes.
The diatribe. The Smothered diatribe.
Smothered!
Smothered! And it's...
we have a guest appearance from
Archbishop Benedict Hollandaise.
Yeah, he'll be on the scene giving us his rants.
His evil twin, Dr. Masmoothie Mustache.
That's right. yeah, that's right. So that was it was a good trip, and it was so great. Steven is so freaking cute. That baby.
I know everyone says babies like, oh, babies are just cute. Like,
yeah, they're
no
cute.
No one sees ugly babies. There's no such thing as an ugly baby.
No, but this baby.
He ought to be on like...
Like the Gerber box or something.
Those eyebrows.
The eyebrows. He just smiles constantly.
Do you think... And he's young. I don't know. Do you think he's going to be a ginger? Is he going to be redheaded?
Well, his mom's redheaded.
Eleanor is natural.
Naturally,
hair is red.
Yeah. She was like red like through high school. And then you know how us women are. We go wherever we want after that. But yeah, she's you know, I would say all on the auburnish side. So it would not surprise me to see that hue.
But I think in his hair is not it's not very red now. It's more like chestnutty auburny.
Yeah,
and I assume it'll darken. Most you know kids.
And he's just getting some. He's only 8 and a half months.
But the eyebrows. He's got some red eyebrows.
Oh, I just can't. He's so cute.
You know, I don't know if it's their...
We got to babysit him and everything.
The modern parenting style. It's, yeah. You know, just... I've seen other parents approach it this way, but the baby is so central to everything.
Sure.
It's like... The baby doesn't fucking like burp without somebody knowing it. Like it's monitored constantly. There's a journal, like how much food do we have at this time and that time and at what this and that.
Well,
but the vigilance, at least when we were there for like 3 days, kid didn't cry, didn't want for nothing. It was like, because you know what the schedule is. So if there's fussing, it's like, nope, he's probably wet. Nope,
yeah,
he's tired.
Yeah, I think
nope,
it's a lot about like, because, you know, they're busy people. And I think a lot of that is just... Keeping him on a schedule allows him to sleep all night, allows him to take naps appropriately, sure. Allows him to, you know, have good bowel movements and all those good other things. Yeah, just, you know, babies like structure. It's good for them.
I guess he was want of absolutely nothing.
Just and extra
hugs. You could tell. It was just – and he's 8.5 months old and they've got hardwood floors. Oh, yeah. I've never seen a fucking baby bear crawl. Like, not on his, not on his knees,
no,
on his feet and hands.
Feet and hands.
And motors.
Dude, he can move.
He's going to be running, man.
That baby's little, fast.
The gal that helps him out said when she takes him to, like, Jamboree, all the other parents are like, what the fuck? Who is this kid? He's sprinting on all fours.
He is quick.
He moves.
I was cooking. He came behind me, like, real silent-like in the kitchen. When I was cooking dinner for everybody, I turned around. I was like, Steve, what are you doing in here? Just like snuck up on me.
I'm like, I've never seen a bear crawl.
Yeah, and I haven't seen it before either.
It's a auto spurious whatever generation.
Hey, he's got to get where he's
got
to go.
But I think it's from the environment because they got the hardwood floors and he's in the, you know, shit with knees on it that slip around in the winter.
I can't be slipping around here. I got places
to go,
slipping.
People. I got to be bear crawling.
All right.
Make it happen.
I'm super sick, so let's get in this bullshit right now.
The news is turned on. You know how Chonilla has their bit about the news, and the news is always good, right? Their little...
ours is not like that.
Yeah, ours needs to be like, the news is always fucking racist-y.
Because it is.
It seems like it always is. But
look here, we went away for 4 days. I stepped away from Ferguson response, everything. I really unplugged. I didn't even go online at all, hardly at all, while we were there. We had so many people to see, and I really was just... relaxing. Our friends that we stayed with, live on a lake, so it was just really relaxing, and you know, we didn't have to like worry about anything. And 4 days, came back to 3 fucking hashtags, 3 more unarmed black men killed by law enforcement, 1 naked.
And what's that gentleman's name? Was that the guy in was it Milwaukee?
No, that's the one in Atlanta, because, you know, there's got to be one.
There's just so many happening. It's difficult to keep track.
And I'll be talking at length about this tomorrow on the Ferguson Response Network. So I don't want to actually spend time talking about it, but it just was, you say, like, oh, the news is always racist-y. I'm like, I tried to unplug for 4 fucking days. And I was sitting there like, oh, my God, you got to be kidding me.
And you're right. You'll talk about it, and I'm sure we'll tweet about it on the page. But how, you know, all these different... narratives that the police fairy tale reached for the gun, this other thing. If you, as a person whose job is to serve and protect, if your job is cop, right? That's your job. And you can't manage to restrain a naked individual in a mental breakdown. What the fuck are you doing? What the fuck is your job? If literally your solution to someone who's naked, there's not a goddamn weapon.
You have it completely wrong, because that's not the solution to someone in that state. It's the solution to a black person.
Forgive me. Thank you for the correction.
That is the truth.
It's just
because
absurd.
Because in their minds, the black person it's not a person at all, actually. We're behemoth, Hulks,
yeah.
We don't feel pain.
Darren Wilson.
We could run through bullets and do all sorts of stuff.
You're right.
It put me in mind of, I mean, you, when you were in the semi-medical field and you were working in a group home, and you had to restrain someone who was larger than you,
absolutely,
who had weight over you, who was going through a psychotic episode and was also naked. Did it ever occur to you, you know what I need in this situation? A gun.
Now, you know, I'll be honest. It that day.
And that was dangerous.
I remember it specifically. And it was probably the day I decided this isn't the work for me.
Sure.
And not because I wasn't like mad about it. It was just, it is what it is. But if my job at $6.90 an hour means I have to crawl into a bathtub and restrain a very large person writhing around naked, and there's a way to do it. It's called a basket wrap. And,
I know.
You know, I just, that, and you're right. It's implicit bias and fear of a black person. It's just he's fucking naked. I said, yeah. But let's talk
it
about.
It put me in mind of that because I actually read a quote from a nurse talking about it. She's like, I come in contact with mentally ill individuals sure. having psychotic breaks all the time, and the number of ways in which to interact and take that person down that don't involve a gun. You know, that's our job. It's dangerous for us every single day too.
Absolutely.
But we don't feel the need to literally end people's lives. He was a fucking veteran.
I had a.
I just don't even understand. It's so fucking frustrating. It's so frustrating. Let's not talk about it because I don't even want to go in there. What was the first thing we were
talking about? It's not that it's any better. But so a sanitation worker started picking up the trash a little bit too early for a wealthy white suburb in Atlanta and ended up spending 2 weekends in jail and getting sentenced to 30 days in jail. There was a bit of outrage, and they've since rescinded the 30-day penalty. But so he was – they called 911. His job is to pick up the trash. He has a – I don't know how this works, but I assume you have a truck and you take the truck and there's a route and it's like automated, you know, with the handle that comes out and picks the can up. But it's 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I imagine the individual has a route. And he did start at 5 a.m. once. I guess, you know, it wasn't just a little bit early. It was 2 hours early. But, you know, for fuck's sake, he's picking up
– But it was
trash.
One time he did this?
There was multiple times. He was cited once. It was at 5 a.m., but he was. It said that he was in violation of the noise ordinance by starting too early on multiple occasions. But nevertheless, they called 911. The privilege. Fucking white-ass privilege to call 911?
Yeah. You know what that means.
So, wait a minute.
White people.
God, that's just crazy.
Yep.
911. And the guy went to fucking jail. He spent 2 weekends in jail. He's a father and shit.
He's doing a job that you wouldn't even deign for your housekeeper to do.
Nah.
And you call 911 on him for doing his job.
That's crazy.
Because you didn't want to get woken up. Okay, cool. I want to hear the other side because, you know, there's always two sides. True.
Well, and Chief Prosecutor Bill Riley from the WSB told WSB that the jail sentence was his idea because he said fines just don't seem to work. The only thing that seems to stop
people.
The activity is actually going to jail.
Why don't they fine the person that is in charge of the – like, this guy doesn't own the garbage the garbage company.
Yeah, it's not Joe Waste Management.
Like, why isn't his employer the one that's having to go to jail?
You know, there could be fines. His name is Kevin McGill. And, you know,
well,
shout
out to you, Kevin.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to send him something. We got his address? Or is there a place you can send things for
him? I'll look it up. I'll make sure it gets in the show
notes. Yeah, please. Because this is some bullshit.
That's crazy. He's literally got a wife and kids, and he spent weekends in jail for what you just said, doing a job that most of those people wouldn't even fucking – they would refuse to let their kids even dream of having that job. And he's doing it, and he did it. Oh, too early for your precious little sleep. So you called 911? That – white people. The temerity.
Speaking of privilege.
Oh, boy. I know where you're going.
Well, you know, we have to just at least touch on this bullshit SAE fraternity bullshit.
Oh, no.
And actually, I'll be talking about it also tomorrow on the Ferguson Response Network podcast at length. So we don't need to go too much into it today. But I know between the two of us, we've been talking. First of all, can you just look up the names of these two fucks that they actually have identified?
Yeah, they had some sort of like trip, like literally like
the
whitest
names.
I'll definitely we'll be talking the shit out of this on the White Privilege podcast. But I will look it up while you do your bit.
But we wanted to, I just said the only thing I want to talk about here was, you know, the response from the school, from the fraternity, from just everything that occurred. And this actually also was everything that occurred with the three deaths that were this weekend by law enforcement. I've seen this, and this is definitely, you know, people talk about post-racial America.
So, I'm sorry, Parker Rice and Levi Pettit.
Parker and Levi.
And I'm sorry, I got that wrong. Levi Pettit is the individual, and his parent is Parker Rice.
Oh, sorry. Parker Rice. Yeah. No, Parker Rice is the kid, for sure, because I saw that. There's two kids. One of them's name is definitely Parker Rice. That's the one from Dallas. I went to the Jesuit school.
Parker Rice, parents of Levi Pettit, apologize for a horrible mistake made in OUSA video.
That's weird. I really know the kid's name is Parker Rice.
So Levi Pettit's family apologized for their son's behavior. Parker Rice, the reason he sentences. Yeah, no, Parker Rice is the individual that is the one that went to the Jesuit University.
That's what I just said.
Yeah. And then it's, oh, I guess the other
there's
guy.
There's a second kid.
Oh, the other kid's name is Levi. So it is Levi and Parker.
Thank you.
Oh, shit. Levi what? And Parker.
Yeah.
You know, if you were going to put like 50 white dude names in a hat and pick the one that was going to join and rush a frat and get caught on video chanting the N-word, I might have put Parker and Levi 1 and 2.
Yeah.
No diss to Parker and Levi's everywhere, but God damn.
Only boy Parkers. Girl Parkers are fine. It's boy Parkers.
Yeah, Parker fine. Posters are. I like girl
no, Parker. I know lots of girl Parkers that are great, but boy Parkers, fuck y'all. Anyways, just the reaction. I thought that the university acted very appropriately. I thought that the president of the university specifically acted, I mean, not just appropriately, but swiftly.
Yeah, within, I think, it was like under 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
From seeing the video.
He was like, nah, y'all got
informed.
Till midnight. Get your shit out.
No, I'm saying it was made aware to him on Twitter.
Right.
And within 2 hours of it being posted, meaning him being at it on Twitter, he had already said, I've got a team, we're investigating it. You know, it was swift.
No, and I'm just saying swift was that day. He was like, you have till midnight, get your shit.
When
somebody will escort it out. They pulled the letters off the building, like the whole thing.
And I
said to you, I was like, this is a very appropriate
reaction.
Appropriate is
the right word.
Appropriate is, I don't think anything other than what happened should have happened, but I do think that there has been a lack of substance in terms of the discussion about it because no one's really talking about why it happened.
Sure. And we've talked about this, you and I, and I've talked about it on the White Privilege podcast, the focus on a society level on individual overt racists and acts of people that, you know, say the N-word or other epithets versus racism, the systems of oppression that are, you know, centuries old and, you know, institutionalized in a variety of ways. And it's a shame that we focus on an individual act versus white supremacy.
I think we need to do both. But I think there have to be consequences to individual acts of racism. But I also think that excuse me, I'm really sorry, everybody, but this cold is horrible. But I also think I would have been much happier with the president's statement had he said, this is not indicative of what we want. And white supremacy is the reason why this climate has been allowed to fester in this fraternity, and we want to root it out wherever it is. That would have been a great statement.
Well, I mean, he's a top university with, you know, white supremacy. Like any primary white college university is going to have a lot of it.
So, yeah. So, like I said, you know, you'll be talking about it on White Privilege Podcast. I'll be talking about FRN. So we don't need to really dwell on it here. But I do hope that we can transition from speaking only about these individual acts and really getting to the root of why these acts occur, because I think that's really the only way to service the issue properly.
Yeah.
And it's baby steps. I mean, let's be honest. A year ago, I don't think any of this shit would have happened.
And that was going to be my question is we've talked
a year ago, you know, the football players wouldn't have dressed all in black and left practice to come outside and march with the students at OU. Fuck that. No way that would have happened a year ago.
Well, and you can even, let's look exactly a year ago. We had Riley Cooper using the N-word.
Oh, yeah. Great.
We had Paula Deen using the N-word, wanting to have a plantation themed wedding with all, you know, black servers. And I'm not saying that our reaction as a society to either of these is different, but it does feel a little bit different. It feels like there's a alacrity, a swiftness with which the response from, you know, at large society is coming. And we've talked a bit about this sort of piling on, like once there's like, you know, five or six people saying, hey, this is inappropriate, there are more moderate people that are more comfortable to jump on that bandwagon, so to speak. And I feel like the rapidity with which as a society we're castigating these, you know, overtly racist acts, it seems quicker, and the repudiation seems more complete and almost severe. But in some way, like you said, if that doesn't then go to the root cause of white supremacy, you know, what have we done other than now made? And I think it emboldens to some degree, like the white supremacist groups, like they take the actions against these individuals as censorship, as, you know, condemning thought and condemning, you know, they're just, you know, they want to be with only white people. Why is that so wrong? If black people did the same thing, you wouldn't be complaining about it. Like, it emboldens them. They really get, in fact, the KKK is like recruiting off of this shit. It's weird, but it's definitely different.
I mean, what else are they going to recruit off of? So I don't really think that's a good point. Well, I think that the thing for me that's different is like black people are just, we're just fed the fuck up.
That's the real difference.
We are just like, yeah, nah, we're not. And I mean all across the board. I just think every black person.
What was the middle school where they walked out?
It was a Howard Middle School.
Yeah. I think that's indicative of what you're talking about. And I think the more people are willing to quickly castigate actions, probably because people of color are so, like you said, just fed up. They're just, you know, it's not like emboldened. It's like, nope, enough's enough. I see something. I'm going to fucking say something. I'm going to say it loud and vociferously, and you're going to hear me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if
I think
all black people were like that.
I don't know. I think it goes beyond that. I have this quote I use all the time. People on Twitter love it. I say that white people have been afraid of black pride. They've been afraid of black love. They've been afraid of black power. But they are shitting their pants at the thought of black rage.
Oh, yeah.
And that is what they are truthfully reacting to. That's why see the swiftness, because the possibility of black rage is so close. Because I'm not joking, man. We're pissed. And
rightfully.
Absolutely. I'm pissed. So I think that for me, that's that you say there has been a change or hasn't been. To me, that's what the difference is. It's like all those other things they were previously afraid of didn't threaten them, but they haven't even ever seen black rage. And to be perfectly honest, like, that's how I know the beauty of black people is that we haven't burnt this fucking country down yet, that we haven't just set every fucking thing aflame.
That was Cornell's quote, yeah?
because by now, any lesser person would have. And I know for a fucking fact that white people would have. I know that.
Well, and you can't...
Because y'all don't know how to act.
You can't...
You win a goddamn game and fucking start burning shit, so...
You can't really untangle whiteness and supremacy and you know, where we're at in terms of that description. But, yeah, no. You know, if you flip the script overnight, if you were able to, white people would be... Forget about it. We'd, you know, wouldn't just not stand. We'd all be in unison. Nothing would work. The entire country would shut down. And white people are like, are you kidding me? You just shot an unarmed white boy and you're going to sweep it under the rug? No fucking way.
Right. All right, let's move on, dude.
So speaking of shitty white people, you remember the young boy that abused a bus matron so many years ago?
Yeah.
So he's apparently back in the news. So the woman was Karen Klein.
Oh, right. And he was calling her ugly.
Oh, and horrible.
Yeah,
and then
I remember.
They videotaped it and put it on YouTube. Like,
yeah,
it wasn't
but you
just,
know what? She got a vacation and a new house and all
vacation.
Sorts of shit.
She got right. $750,000.
That's what I'm saying. She's
she got,
right.
Hey, you know, she got turned into a viral whatever. But anyway, they were like horribly mean, like, you know, I know your address, I'm gonna, you know, come and I wouldn't even like fuck you ugly old, like, just really horrible. So the young boy at the heart of this incident is now in the news again. He apparently, with some other young boys at his school, forced a special needs student to drink his own urine in a bathroom in school. He's now in the seventh grade. Wonderful, wonderful young man.
Awesome.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
He's still a total dick.
What's his name?
I'll have to look it up. I don't know if they give it out because
He's still a fucking minor?
He's only in the seventh grade.
Man, somebody should put that kid out of his misery.
Let's see here.
He's going to be killing people soon.
Same kid.
What's wrong with... Who are his parents? Does he have parents?
Let's see here now.
Is he just living in a van down by the river? I mean, what the fuck is going on here?
He's in Greece, New York.
Good God.
And they don't... They do not.
No, they won't. If he's in the seventh grade,
he's not in seventh grade. He was in the seventh grade with the bus incident.
That's what I thought. Maybe now
he's now
a
freshman.
Like,
he's still not.
Oh, he's
still
not. I thought if he was 16, they probably would have put his name.
Not yet.
Man, I'm gonna find you out, dude.
Yeah. And so his harassment video of Ms. Klein has 9 million views on YouTube. Like, it's kind of funny. And he did the same shit with this when he made the kid drink his own urine. They did it on Snapchat video and sent it to all their little buddies and friends in high school.
Because he's an asshole. You know what though? Really makes me think of what's going on in his home. That this is how he gets attention. It's very sad.
Unbelievably so.
No, seriously. It's really concerning.
There's something there.
You know, I would not be surprised if he's being abused significantly and violently. So somebody should really be sending DCFS to that home immediately.
Almost when you see people torturing little animals, you know, they go from like mice to cats and dogs and shit. Just like this, he's his abuse and his taping of it went from verbal to... You know, not like sexual, physical.
No, it's
you
true.
Know?
No, hurt people. It's true.
That's not a coincidence.
No.
This young man, I you know, I don't want to say I want to know his name, but if I was in Greece, New York, and my principal was David Richardson.
Greece, New York ain't that big. People know who he is.
David Richardson's
one of y'all
the principal.
Send, if anybody can the hear fuck? Us or any contacts in Greece, New York, please send someone to that house. Something is going on wrong. Maybe they took him in a closet. Something is really wrong going on there. It's very disturbing.
Yeah,
this is beyond bully behavior. Because the thing about the matron thing is a bunch of kids were gathering in, and I could see that being more of a peer pressure situation and him just being a dick. Because when you're seven, middle school's the worst. I say this shit all the time, that like middle school's the worst. You know exactly how to hurt people, but have no idea what consequence means yet.
Yeah.
You know, but he's older than that now. And he also had consequences from this first incident. So this is really concerning. So hopefully
he's probably a sophomore or junior.
He really needs to get his shit together.
You know, there's only another.
Because otherwise he's going to be in jail soon.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's only another year or two.
Another year or two and you will be locked up, young man.
And I just.
No matter your color.
I would say,
be making people drink urine.
The way he's treated now an elderly person and now someone with special needs.
Yeah.
He knows. He's picking on people that he can.
That he can.
You know, I just, if I was a woman in his life, I would not have my...
He doesn't have any women in his life.
Wouldn't, well.
And the woman that might be in his life is abusing him. And I'm telling you, seriously, that somebody needs to go and help this young man. Because something bad is happening there.
Well, let's lighten the mood.
Am I black enough for you?
Uh-huh.
Am I black enough for you?
Yeah!
My new voice fits the actual timbre of that song.
You do have some sexy bass in your voice. I dig it.
Because I'm all about that bass. About that bass.
Now, who sings that? Is that Iggy?
No, that's Meghan Trainor sings that other song.
I don't even know who that is.
She's the girl that sings that song. That's really all she does.
Okay. It's not like that chandelier song that I didn't know that everyone else in the world knows.
That would be like you saying you never heard the song All About That Bass. That's how ridiculous it is, because that chandelier song was everywhere. I just don't even understand.
Sing the melody now. I still don't even know it.
I can't sing it because my voice is terrible right now.
Who sings it?
Sia sings it. S-I-A. Ridiculous.
Oh, shit. It came up right away.
Of course it did. You fucking crazy. Please.
Who's C-I-A?
No, S-I-A.
S-I-A. I'd never.
One, two, three. One, two, three.
I had a lot
three,
of great
three.
Memories in my Honda.
Damn commercials. See, I expect a commercial when I go to a YouTube video. That's okay. Like, play a commercial. No problem. But CNN, all the goddamn time.
Yeah, screw you, CNN.
Hate you. All right, so this is Sia.
Sia, yeah.
And she's the weird one with the hair.
She's the weird one that she doesn't like anybody to see her face.
She had the big white wig on the Grammys, right?
And she has one in this video, too.
Holy shit. 600 million plays? This thing's been played half a billion times?
You never heard it. Man, shut the fuck up.
I know it now. I've heard this, but when you first...
Listen, ZZ is not even five. She knows the words to the song.
She did do this dance. They're doing this
one,
dance.
Two, three,
no
one,
wonder
two,
they
three,
were doing
three,
that dance.
One, two, three, one, two, three,
oh, that Christmas
one,
makes a lot more
three,
sense
one,
now.
Two, three,
three. No, okay. And that's one of these little dance mom kids dancing?
Yeah, it's Maddie from Dance Moms.
All right, well... I didn't know that shit, but this
clearly.
Is...
Clearly. Anywho.
We've tangentially digressed.
Yes, because we were supposed to be doing, am I black enough for you? Yeah. So what are we doing with this? Oh, yeah, I'm doing it. So the FLOTUS with the mostest, of course, was on Ellen DeGeneres. And funnily enough, we went to see, as we mentioned earlier, we went to see Wanda Sykes. She had a really funny comic that opened for her. I don't remember his name. Maybe I'll look it up at some point. And he talked about how Michelle Obama hates fat kids.
Right.
Which is really funny. It's like, oh, if you have a fat kid, you know, don't bring the fat kid around Michelle Obama because she hates fat kids and everything. So, of course, she has her, like, move it or move on or whatever it is, where she wants people to exercise and kids to eat healthier and blah, blah, blah. So this new one she's doing, which is called the 5 things, and she has all these famous people doing like 5 things that they can do to get healthy or to move or to exercise. And so she went on Ellen DeGeneres' show to show off this dance that goes along with her new thing, and it's to that Uptown Funk Gonna Give It to You song, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to look up the guy that opened up for her, and I can't find it.
But before she took to the stage to dance her ass off, which she did, of course, because she got the moves like Jagger. She had a little sparring time with Alan because they had done previously, I think like a year ago, a push-up contest, which, you know, Michelle just like schooled Alan in.
I have that queued up if you want
to. Yeah, play.
You think I have people?
Yeah, there were so many people. Everyone was telling me. Well, listen, I'm in better shape than you, so what we'll do is... I mean, we know that from the push-up
it's
competition.
It's clearly. Won the
you
push-up.
You did not win.
I absolutely
you cheated. And you,
I did not.
Okay. Let's not. You're pretty.
Well, we can see.
All right. Let's. Let's
see.
No.
We have here.
We have.
Now.
A push-up competition again?
No.
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 The give me five.
Look how scared you were of that.
Look.
She's trying to take her jacket off.
Don't make me take off my jacket.
You can stop it there.
Philotas.
He said, don't let me take off my jacket.
She had a little move, too.
She did. She was taking it off.
And then didn't she dance with Ellen?
She did. She danced with Ellen and Travis Wall and Twitch and a whole bunch of other people from So You Think You Could Dance. It was awesome.
I like her getting out there.
I love
doing more.
Philotas. She's awesome. I wish she would run for president. I vote for her.
Mm. Michelle. I like her five. That's a good.
Yeah, it's good. Five. It's cute.
It's a good little hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Easy to do. Yeah. You can like Vine it and shit.
Yeah, she's cute.
That's very nice.
I like it.
So I guess kind of like a lame duck blackness, like into like a wah wah.
Yeah.
So 4 out of 10 people say that race relations have worsened since Obama took presidency.
That doesn't surprise me.
You know, it doesn't surprise me, but like part of that, there's the whole like, and CNN, you're gonna play a fucking video for me. I'm gonna be so pissed. Here it comes. I gotta get on the pause button, you fucker. I swear to God, I hate CNN so much. But no, the inherent in that statement is that President Obama, because he's black, would have done, you know, I don't know, some sort of magical thing with race, like with regards to supremacy. Let's be realistic, not regards to race, but like literally with white supremacy. And I think that's ascribing an awful. And I think he's done a lot. He's talked, more about race than any president, period. Much less like, you know, ever. You know what I mean? Like seriously, he's really done a lot, but. Of course, people are going to shade and say it's not nearly enough and this and that. So I think inherent in the assumption that like, oh, we have a black president. Like, poof, it goes 400 years of anti-black oppression. Yay.
Oh, I don't think anybody thought that. I think this is something different, though. You're saying that they've worsened. This isn't to say that he hasn't been able to make it better. What you're talking about would have been if they had just stayed the same. This is something else.
That's, you're right. The way the question's framed has made it worse.
This is something that has made
it's certainly emboldened
worse. I think two things are at play. One is that black people are like, what? We got a, what? He in the White House now. Man, fuck y'all. That's the first thing. Because I'm black, y'all.
We in the White
I'm
House.
Black, y'all.
Fuck off.
I'm bliggity, 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 black, y'all. So that's the first thing. No, I'm just kidding.
Black people be like, the fuck?
Anyways, so, well, not just that. I do think
that's a variable.
There's a level of just like, hey, you know, we've achieved something.
There's some swagger.
Important. It's a milestone. It's something that's different. I'd imagine Catholics felt the same way when JFK was voted in.
Hmm.
There was this like, oh, they're heathens.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
serve the Pope. They don't serve the country. You know, there was all of
sure,
this like,
sure, sure,
it, you know, there is something there to that. So I think that's the first thing. And I also think it has definitely, you have a generation of young people that's what they know. You know, he's 6 years into his presidency, campaigning for 2 years prior to that. So now, you know, that's a long time.
Yeah.
To have this educated, well-spoken, well-received, incredibly intelligent, funny, dapper black man up in your face like, yeah, look at me, and, deuces,
and,
you know?
And what has the same...
The flip people, side of that, though.
But no, what is the same group of people that are watching that see how he's treated? And you know, some media outlets talk a little bit about it, but on the real... Everything from fucking the number of vetoes, fucking filibusters, fucking all the horseshit he has to put up with.
But
it's
I think,
so because he's black.
But I think so that's why it's made. That's the other part of it. The one part is that black people and people that might, not to say sympathetic to the black cause, but people that will identify with equality in that way would see this as a marked moment. But also it's very illustrative that, you know, as Ashley Yates likes to say, your resume will not stop a bullet. So he's a very good example of, you know, there's no way to dress your way out of being treated badly. There's no way to talk your way out of being treated badly. There's no way to educate your way out of being treated badly, because it has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the racist. And I think that's why black people are fed up, because I think pre-Obama, I think there was a lot of, you know, unintentional internalized self-hate that we allowed ourselves to think, well, you know, maybe we're not really showing our best face. We're really not, you know, we're really not putting forth the best way that we could. Okay. And we could see how people might want to take what's out there.
You can't interpret that, man, with the shit he gets.
You can't look at our first family. And I will include all of the Obamas in this, because they all get shit.
You cannot
look at anything that has been thrown at them and know that it has anything to do with them. So I think that's the one side of it. And the other side is always that, you know, anything that threatens people that are in power only makes them dig their heels in deeper. And so that's what has happened. It's like, holy shit, this dude's popular. People like this guy.
Yeah, I think it's
holy
even,
crap.
I agree with you, but
we need to double down on this racism
and
stuff.
And not just double down, but I would say that it's normalized. And you know, it's basically on a national grand scale said, hey, you know what? Anti-black conditioning, yeah, don't sweat it, dude. Let's just shit on this black dude. Don't sweat it. Let's just shit on black people. Don't worry about it. Like, openly and like, but like, you know, really convincingly. And again, in such a way that.
But I don't think that, I honestly, Drew, like, my thing is, I don't think that it actually has gotten worse. I just really think that people are actually looking at it. That's what's changed.
I think the measurement and the awareness and the lens has changed. And I think that there's a group of it's almost like you fire up your base, right? There's a base level of, you know, people that are really bought into supremacy. And they include all manner of individuals, conservative, liberal, you name it. And I think the last 6 years, because of the attacks and shit he's been getting and just the way that everything's been run, I think it's normalized to some degree.
I just vehemently disagree.
Well, I mean, maybe normalized is the wrong, because you said that it's an awareness. There's more of a lens for it. Maybe it's just people are talking about it and it seems to be, you know, like the whole, is it more crime, or are we just really like observing this differently and more and recording it differently? Maybe that's what I'm perceiving, is that there's more dialogue on it. So it seems, you know, you hear about more things more often, or maybe I'm just more dialed into it. You know, I grew up in a pretty fucking sheltered place.
Yeah, I don't think that it's people are more racist because of Obama, but I do think that people are more, like you said, they're more in tune to it, they're more dialed into it. And also, this concept of microaggression never even existed prior to this era of discussion around race. And when you add that layer, it will seem like it's much more racist, but all of those things were already going on.
Yeah.
They were. They just were.
You know, and maybe this is the, not emboldened, it seems just on the like you said, on the one side, you know, people of color, yourself specifically, like, you know what, fuck this. This is so obviously, you know, anti-black. This is ridiculous. Fuck out of this. On the other side, it's made them like equally more delusional. You know what I mean? Like, as much as you're like, fuck this, this is so about race, it's not about race at all. It's kind of, you know, so I guess this make things worse. That's, when you frame that question, I wouldn't say worse. I think that's inappropriate. But 40% said they do.
I could see them thinking that, because especially with white people, I feel like they would have thought there was never anything wrong.
Well, worse is it's less comfortable.
Right.
Worse is we're talking about it.
And that's true.
We're talking about it. And that is true. Wait a minute. That Ferguson kids video made me feel so sad.
No, it's totally true. I read on last week's episode of the Ferguson Response Network podcast, we actually delved deep into white supremacy. It's deep roots here in our country, okay, and hidden hidden effects. And I had a couple quotes from Ta-Nehisi Coates actually at the speech we went to, but he said that he wrote the case of reparations not to convince white people, but, quote, on the contrary, I have always said that, to be perfectly blunt, there's nothing wrong with black people that the complete and total elimination of white supremacy would not fix. That is why it seems like it's more racist now, because black people realize that and they're like, wait a second, y'all been trying to say it's our fault this whole time and you're the problem. And that's really why it seems like it's more.
They just did on Morning Joe. We're not talking more about it, but no, on MSNBC.
Honestly, I can't
blaming even blaming hip-hop music for the kids chanting hang a N-word from a tree. Come on, get the fuck out of here. That's crazy.
Yeah, to quote Ta-Nehisi again, he says, and this is another thing that plays into, he says, the wretched treatment meted out to African Americans and the wretched treatment meted out to Native Americans in the minds of most white people is almost separate from the core idea of what America is.
Yeah, it really is. We use different words and everything.
America is the place of democracy, freedom, all of these other values, and these other things that sort of just mistakes that just happened along the road, as opposed to thinking of those mistakes as things that actually made all those other good things possible.
Yeah.
It's very hard for people to get their heads around. I mean, how then do you think about your country, you know, if the founding fathers are not what you thought they were?
You mean they were pedophiles and slave owners and horrible people?
If you guys want to hear more about that, please do listen to the most recent episode of the Ferguson Response Network. We delve very deeply into Bacon's Rebellion of 1676, which is the, I would say, flashpoint of white supremacy in this country, and the slave codes of 1860, which made a specific delineation between white and black servitude. And then we talk about our founding fathers generally, specifically about George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, white women during slavery. And then we go forward from there. But it's a really great episode.
And that's the brilliance of Coates' case for reparations, is that it follows a path through home ownership. Specifically land and home ownership,
yep,
of wealth and generational wealth building, and the ways and manners with which black people have been systematically kept out of home ownership. And it included an individual that's alive today. So this isn't like, ooh, in back yesteryear.
Nope.
This is Chicago in the 60s called contract lending. Yep. It's just, you know. And so Ricky's even doing a whole bit about Chicago another week, I think, on his AUA podcast. And I'm going to be on that because, as you know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago in kind of like a sundown town.
Yeah, well, that actually segues quite nicely into the next piece we wanted to talk about, which was selling a home while black.
Yeah, so the
which is something we actually had to personally have a conversation about recently.
And I got to be 100 on it.
You didn't think about it.
I didn't think about it until you said something. And then when you did say something, I was like, I didn't take a second. I'm like, she's right. She's totally right. And then you do a little research and it's like, whoa, she's really right. There's you know, actual examples.
So we're in the process of about to sell our house. And I had said to Very White Guy, I said, hey, you know, we don't have a lot of personal photos up, not for any dramatic reason, but just because that's not the way we decorate our house.
That's not how we roll.
Yes, we are a contemporary home, and so we have artwork up, but we don't have personal pictures, except for one. We have one portrait of ourselves in our living room, and I said,
that's a dope ass photo of us too.
It's a great photo. I said, we might want to take that down. And I said, and I definitely want to make sure I'm not here anytime someone comes to see the house. He's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well,
I didn't say what you're talking about. I said, oh yeah? And you said, yeah. And I said, oh yeah, you're right. It didn't take me a second.
I was like, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
So so then we started doing a little bit more research, and you found a couple of articles that talk specifically about, you know, this the one more black tax, which is making it difficult for black homeowners to sell their homes.
Yeah, so and it really, you know, like I was saying before, that the front end, right? Black individuals or people of color are redlined district. They're prevented. They're, you know, sundown town. You can't live here. All that stuff. And now, today, the likelihood of a person of color receiving a subprime mortgage with the exact same credit, all the income, all the employment, everything the same as a white person, it like doubles. Like you have a 200% chance more likely of getting a subprime mortgage sent your way as a person of color. So there's a variety of front-end penalties, but there's actually a pretty hefty back-end penalty as well. And I I guess I subscribe it to supremacy and anti-black bias, but there's an article in The Root. An individual is a writer, and they had a $500,000 home in a beautiful California suburb, and they had identical houses that sold quickly within the first couple of weeks. They had, comps that were selling for higher that they should have been, and they in their mind should have been selling for more. And they went, a long time. They couldn't figure it out, and nobody could really figure it out. And the realtor says, I don't want to say it's race. I don't know. And they had people that would come and see the house. They would leave. They would come for a second time. They're like, oh, no. They'd see that it was a black family, and they'd take off. They took all the pictures down. I mean, really, they took like a lot of steps to try to sell this house. They lowered the price. In the end, they ultimately removed all identifying indications that it was a black homeowner, and they did not see the individual. They did all the paperwork and everything through their real estate agent until it was time to, give over possession. They never said hi to him. They never showed their face or anything. And that, I don't want to say that like depresses me, but of course it makes sense, but fucking A, man. Jesus.
Yep.
Tax on the front end and on the back end.
And on the back.
Because now they sold their house. They were on the market longer, which cost money, right? They had to, they were under the gun. They had to leave for another job somewhere. So they're going to have two mortgages possibly or two living expenses. So they take a loss. They take a, or they sell for less money than they want to. And for what? Because they're black. They even had a neighbor. They had a brochure outside, and somebody came up and was looking outside at a neighbor that was renting. They didn't even know who it was really, They didn't know that they weren't on a personal level with them, that came up and spoke for quite a long time, for like 10-15 minutes with this person, at the end of which the person put the flyer back and left. Like a neighbor talking them out, like, oh, that's the black family.
Right.
Fucked.
Yeah, it's fucked. Anyways, we'll be going the devoid of blackness route with our home selling.
Yeah. So they're and I meant to say on that other article we're talking about Obama and the 4 out of 10, they did break it down. And it was 45% of whites and 26% of blacks
bolsters what I said.
Yeah.
Which is that white people, just because we're forcing them to be uncomfortable in these situations, they think that it's gotten worse. It's like, no, we're just calling you on your shit more.
Right.
So that's not worse. Because you're still acting like assholes.
Well, and we on my timeline, God damn these auto videos. We talked about
pressing?
I'm pulling up an article, and it's got fucking autoplay videos. This one's now the Forbes.com site about homeownership. But so a lot of people really questioned the black wealth statistic that I've posted before.
Sure.
It's a 20 time difference. And they really don't believe it. And the median net worth of a white household is like 140 some odd thousand. Yep. And for a black household, it's like, 14, literally like 11 or 12,000. Yeah. And people are like, I can't believe it. I make more than that. I said, it's not how much you make. It's what your worth. And your worth is frequently tied into homeownership.
Your worth is, if you stopped working, what are you worth now?
Correct.
Correct. It's not a difficult concept to get.
No. Well, but so nevertheless, people still don't really believe it. So, I've got more than that. I said, yeah, but the generational aspect of white hoarding money and income and passing it down, often through homeownership, that compounds over generations. And now you've got, let's look at the Waltons alone. There's like 17 or 20 Waltons that those individuals alone, their fortune alone eclipses like, 20% of the lowest income earners in our country. Mm-hmm. And there are no, they just had the second, we just now have our third ever and our second current black billionaire, Michael Jordan. He joined Oprah.
Yeah, and they like continue to, I just was reading that thing, like Nikki Hilton married one of the Rothschilds or something.
Of course.
So it's like, a perpetuating situation also.
Yeah. But
whatever, dude.
Well, that's why that gap exists in large part because of homeownership.
That gap exists because of racism and white supremacy.
Yeah.
Long story short.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So there's this really awesome little girl. Are you going to play it or want me to play it?
You play it.
Okay. Who was told that she was ugly at school. So she's a beautiful little black girl, and she was told she was ugly at school. And so this is what her mother recorded of her.
Okay, it's recording now, baby. Sit up, okay? Tell everybody your name.
Hey, it's Miss Cece.
How old are you?
No. Hey, it's C.S. Tatiana Chase.
How old are you?
I'm 4 years old.
What grade are you in?
I'm in K-4.
Okay, what happened in school today?
The little boy said I look ugly.
And what did you say?
I said...
Stop kicking, baby. What did you say?
I said, I didn't came here to make a fashion statement. I came here to learn not look pretty. And the little boy said, I look bad. And I said, did you look at me lately? Bye-bye, see you later. Make me mad.
That girl's everything.
She is so cute.
I'm not here for a fashion show.
I didn't come here for a fashion show.
Her accent is just adorable,
too. She's too cute. I
love it.
Don't know exactly where she's from, but if I had to guess, I would say Guyana, because that's what it sounded like to me.
Definitely a patois, but I'm a Caribbean islander. So
yeah, it sounds like Guyana to me, but I could be wrong. But she didn't come here for no fashion show. She came here to learn.
I love it. I absolutely love it. She did learn. Great. She taught us all, too.
Have you looked in the mirror lately?
What was her name?
Maisha, she said her name. Maisha. So cute.
I'll give her a little ding. I like it. At four.
Yes. Well done, that's going to be the name of the show.
What's that?
We didn't come here for no fashion show. We came here to learn. So it was inevitable, quite frankly.
What's that?
Active meth lab discovered inside Walmart restroom in Indiana.
Wait. Like cooking in a Walmart? They had an active lab going?
Yeah, police found
in a stall?
Police found a meth lab inside a Walmart restroom in Muncie, Indiana on Thursday night. Employees called police around 11:30 p.m. after discovering a suspicious backpack in the men's restroom, according to sister station, whatever. When troopers arrived, they found an active meth lab inside the backpack. Investigators dismantled the lab and removed the chemicals from the store. Police said the men's and women's restrooms would have to be thoroughly decontaminated before being reopened to customers. Investigators are still working to identify the person who left the backpack inside the restroom. I would check with Becky, the checkout girl, because that sounds like some shit. They're like, nah, Becky.
It wasn't just
set up the book bag.
It wasn't just in a Walmart. It was like mobile. It was in a backpack.
So I'm saying, but if she's working, right? Let me just say that.
It's an employee?
Of course it's a fucking employee. If you're not an employee, why would you do it there?
I don't know.
The only reason to do this if you're an employee. You go into work. You're doing two jobs at once. You got the meth cooking in the bathroom. You're checking people out in the front. You're picking up your paycheck. Grab your meth on the way out.
Hey, Leslie, I know you work in the night shift. I know you're at a 4 to 11. Do me a favor. Take the lab.
Telling you.
Take the fucking backpack. It's in mid cook.
It's mid cook. Just.
It's don't shake it up too much.
Set your timer on your phone.
Don't knock it over.
Yeah.
And if you see blue smoke coming out, run.
Run.
So anyways. When I worked at the hotel, we had a company, not like ours, but we outsourced a company to do like hazmat cleaning whenever there was a crime scene. And their name was literally Crime Scene Cleanup.
Of course.
And
that's very, like Sunshine Cleaning.
The
movie.
I would say, at least at our hotel and at least from when I could talk to that guy, it was almost always meth labs.
Yeah.
Because it's a really hazardous cleanup.
It's either meth labs or murders, as far as I know. That's pretty much the only two things they do.
We didn't have any murders in Kalamazoo.
No, you didn't. I'm saying, though, those companies like that. It's sure. For, like, chemicals and then, like, bodily fluids.
Hey, Muncie, Indiana, Walmart. The shitter's got a fucking meth lab cooking.
So, you know, it's funny. I thought most Walmarts were, like, pretty much the same until we went to that one in like Pentucky, do you remember?
Oh my god!
On our way to go camping, and it had a like proper burial for American flags, box or whatever.
It was a box with like a really nice printed sign that said
"Discard
of your old flag here, and it will be disposed of in accordance with the
military something or another." And I was like, but they need this here at the Walmart.
Yeah, that was a weird Walmart.
That was a very strange Walmart. So not all Walmarts are made equal, and apparently in Muncie you can.
Hey, wait till you start hanging out at the Super Meyer, right? We're going to go to the Meyers at 2 a.m.
Now, man, they're getting Trader Joe's now. We're going to be living it up in Grand Rapids.
Trader Joe's is going to be packed for about 11 months.
Sorry. It'd be good. They got the Epicurean. What else do we need?
And that was good pasta.
Yes, it was.
Hey, and what about, we shouldn't talk about, and if you listen, I love you, friends. The game acquires,
I love that game.
It was fun. It was totally fun, but it was almost like, oh, yeah, like, Monopoly's for kids. Like, this is for, like, people that really, like, play around with money.
It was really
it was
good,
like a rich
though.
Person's Monopoly.
No, it was what you said. It was like Monopoly, because Monopoly is like, oh, it's so boring and like, okay,
this
hotels.
Definitely had a, this had a terminus.
This was a and it was a lot of strategy. Really, I would go about it a completely different way now.
I would play a little bit differently.
Yeah, for sure. I really liked it. We should get it.
In fact, it was the gameplay was not clear enough, but I was able to when Ellie won. Be able to say, okay, here's why she won. It was this specific
move
that she made. She had a majority stake in this property that got
and
consumed.
And that one, she only beat me by one. I had nine. She had ten.
Yeah, and the one
and I thought I really thought I had it. I was like, oh, I got all the Americans.
And the other move that she won on was the same way. It was like 7-6.
Yep.
You know.
Yeah, she did a good job.
Played it just right.
Good on you.
Yeah.
E-Fry.
Acquire.
Yeah.
So let's talk about TV movies and stuff.
Yeah, because. The TV show we have been mentioning over and over again, which is called The Jinx, The Life and Deaths Multiple of Robert Durst, who is one of the heirs to the Durst family real estate fortune. They literally run and built the Freedom Tower in New York City. And he is suspected of killing his wife, who disappeared some 30 years ago.
Yep.
He did admit to killing and dismembering a neighbor of his in Galveston, Texas, and it also suspected of killing a friend of his in Beverly Hills, California. So this documentary series has been beyond fascinating.
It's been unbelievable.
And I didn't even know where they were going.
Well, and so we talked last week about Durst giving me chills with his I did not knowingly willingly lie. So
I'm getting the creeps just thinking about him and his black eyes.
They are like little,
you can't even see the whites of his eyes.
Nothing.
He looks like one of those Kree or whatever from the Avengers.
Right. No, he looks like from
my God,
the Underworld series.
The fact
Rise
that two
of the Lycans or something.
That two people actually agreed to marry this man is creepy. Although in his younger pictures, he doesn't look quite as creepy.
So one of the individuals that was kind of close to him that it was assumed knew about the disappearance of his wife.
A confidant of his, a woman.
Her name is
Susan.
Mm-hmm. She turns up dead, but they find her. The reason they're able to find her at all is because somebody sends a letter to the police and says there's a corpse, there's a body at this address. Mm-hmm. And the letter is written in a very block, weird, trying to disguise your own handwriting way. And it has a very specific misspelling of the word Beverly and Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. And you'd assume, well, this maybe came from somebody that cared about this.
Right.
Body.
Like they didn't want her to just sit there.
To decompose.
Right.
They informed us of, you know, here's a body at this location. So.
Plus, if it was Bob here, you knew how messy the dismembering part is.
And this is kind of, I don't say scary, but so the. They found a letter, and whose house did they find it at?
The woman's daughter was the one who got all of her possessions at the time.
And somehow they didn't go through it. The police didn't investigate it, go through it. And it's been sitting in a box for 20-some-odd years.
Yeah.
And the filmmakers get a hold of all this stuff. And they have a scene with the guy, and this is, we haven't seen this, they're previewing it, but he's shaking. He's like, I need confirmation.
No, they did show that.
Oh, they did. So he's literally shaking like a fucking leaf.
They have the phone call. He says, Jim, I really need to talk to you. I need a sanity check. Call me back right away.
Yeah, sanity check.
And he says, I just went through mom's stuff, and there's a letter in there from Robert Durst. It's from on his letterhead, and it has her address written on it, and Beverly is spelled the same way incorrectly that letter that was sent.
No, not just the Beverly. The entire bottom of an address signature. Beverly Hills, California zip code. Like, you know, you don't need to be a handwriting expert. You can look at it and be like, did somebody trace that? That's identical.
Yeah.
So, but
I think the misspelling part is particularly
damaging.
You know, damaging, I think.
So, but they found this, like you said, it's from Durst on his letterhead in the possession of the woman whose body was informed of location by
and he had been sending her checks. Like, they were friends, and she was a little down on her luck. She was trying to sell some movie scripts, and he had sent her, you know, like $25,000. This is a man who they were like, what's going to cost you $1 million to get out? He's like, okay, I'll be out tomorrow. That's how rich these people are. Okay,
well, here's the preview for HBO's.
My name is John Osborne, and I'm a forensic document examiner.
Second. So how many days till Bob?
Next Tuesday, 1 week to Bob.
The envelope, just the letter that's in the envelope. And here's the envelope that came in.
This was found inside this.
How is he going to back out of that?
The problem is that it gives him a lot of time to look down there and be like, oh, they're going there.
I'm seeing you on Tuesday morning, yes? No.
I have given some thought to what I think you're planning on doing. I'm at the point of not doing anything, period.
So Bob basically is off the map. You're about to let him know that you're potentially becoming the enemy.
Dude. That
seriously,
was awesome.
I cannot wait to see it.
I can't believe how it's turned out.
It's crazy.
There was...
Today's Friday, right?
Yeah.
So it's only 2 days away. Sweet.
They spent a lot of time talking about the neighbor he dismembered in Galveston, Texas. Yeah. And one of the lead investigators, he was still to this day so broken up about, in his mind, failing God. Because it's so obvious. Rubber's like, well, of course I dismembered his body after I shot him in the face. Like, you know, like he's not denying the fact that he killed this guy. And their inability to convict him, to get a jury to convict him. This police officer took it like hard, like personally, like turn the camera off.
Well,
right?
I think for him, it's like he already said he killed the guy.
Yeah.
He cut him up in his kitchen and then dumped his body and then disposed of the one piece of the person's body that would tell them exactly what happened in the death. So this is beyond, this is maniacal.
It's not even culpable. It's literally maniacal.
He never even said he didn't do anything
exactly.
They said he did. So to not get a conviction, I mean.
And who's the woman in New York that has a political career now and they, you know, accuse her of being on a witch hunt? But so you know, we're talking the New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, really went after him hard. Galveston, right. Texas went after him really hard. Like they have really tried to hang a body, multiple. Like the show's called The Life and Death of Robert Durst, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I ain't been around anyone who's died in this kind of mysterious way, much less four people with my hand all over it, right? So no one's been able to get him convicted on any of these murders. And they've got the literal, like, smoking letter gun. And they're – I'm saying that they're going to get – obviously, he hasn't been arrested. I don't know what's going to happen after this airs, but it's interesting. I can't wait.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be pretty crazy. I will say that I did see in the Hollywood Reporter that the LADA's office is reopening the case involving Robert Durst as the new evidence from the doc is revealed.
Interesting.
In Susan Berman's death specifically. So,
and this would be a really good show to binge. It's only 6 episodes.
Jarecki said at the miniseries premiere in New York that after the final episode, you're going to know what happened.
Okay.
Is what he says. So it should be interesting. You know, I don't think that there's going to... I mean, he got rid of Kathy's body, so I don't think there's going to be any movement there. But I think everybody just wants something. They want him to be held accountable for something. And I also think that there's a level of the fact that the Dursts have completely separated themselves from him with zero blowback. Just shows you what money can do for
sure.
you.
Sure. I mean, they won. He's had all these deaths and murders.
Yeah.
And they still got the one Freedom Tower.
They got the Freedom Tower rights and everything.
To lease the thing out, right?
Yeah.
Like, and not just lease it out, but to, I think, like you said, to build it, to manage it. That's, fuck, that's like, you know, a contract worth, untold, I don't know how much. And to think that there wasn't graft around there, please. Somebody got
I think
paid.
Beyond graft, I mean, you know the buildings they own. I mean, these are huge buildings. 4 Times Square, 1133 6th Avenue. I mean, these are buildings that have been, I think that they said that they've been the leading Scion real estate family for a century.
Yeah,
a century.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is not something one person is going to be able to wipe out, but I do think you would think that some of their reputation would be
sullied
a little bit, considering he did work there for 22 years.
Yeah.
It's not as though he never had anything to do with the company. It's kind of nuts, though. Yeah, so
Green Man,
it's crazy. I'm very excited to see the end. And honestly, if you guys have HBO, even if you don't, you can now get it for $15 a month. Please watch this documentary. It's fascinating and it's real. And I'm interested to see the conclusion. And I really hope that some peace can come for Kathy's family, even if they don't know specifically what happened to her, but that someone's held accountable for something that he did, because it's just not right. And he really is scary. And I think that same police officer you mentioned in Galveston, you know, he just said, "I just feel very strongly that the general public is much safer without him, you know, out."
Certainly, there's been a lot of deaths.
You know, they don't
follow him around.
It's not the life and death, it's life and death, because they seem to be continually surrounding him. So we have some awesome stuff coming up on the John.
Well, I'll say before that, watch it, because I'm going to spoiler alert the shit out of it.
Yeah, we already have been. We're going to be talking about this shit, so you better watch it.
So you got busy. You got some guests lined up for the John?
Yeah, we've got lots of guests for Ferguson Response and for the John. I'll start with the John. We have my new favorite writer, Ijeoma Olowu. She's going to be – actually, no. Next week we have Ines Smith, who is your old friend from Western Michigan. So he's going to be on next week's show. I'm super excited.
Pull up his bio. Pull that up for just a second.
But – okay, give me a minute.
I want to hear it, because you said it. He wrote it.
Well, no, because I don't want to read it now, and the people.
But give me one sentence, because I haven't read it.
It's long, though.
Oh, it is?
I mean, it's not like super long, but it's like a couple paragraphs. You want me to really pull it up?
Yeah, I was going to just a sentence for Ennis. A little shout out to Ennis.
Hopefully he'll listen, because this will be the episode before his. He says, writing has been his escape from the mundane circle of ordinary life for many years, but for a long time I kept it a secret from the world until God changed me. Once he intervened, I began writing short stories, testimonies, devotionals, and articles for his glory. I believe I have to use my talent to spread the gospel of Christ. And he has a couple of blogs that he writes for, and he also writes his own song lyrics, and he produces music.
Yeah, in fact, I have one of his, let's see, I liked one of his pieces. I'm not sure if this is the one he had he's got an album, The Sheep in Wolf's Clothing, six tracks.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember which is the one that I really liked. They're all good, but there's one I really liked. I guess high production value.
Yeah.
This is I Do Not Fail. It's I would say I get a lot of, and this, he didn't send this to me, I sought it out, but I get a lot of unsolicited Twitter music.
Yes, you
know,
you do.
That's a very common thing. And this is better than almost all of it. Yes. 99% of what I get said on Twitter. It's good. I was really impressed.
Yeah. So that's next week. And then the week after that, we will have Ijeoma Olowu on the show, which I'm so super excited about. She is an amazing writer. I'm sure you've seen her all over the place. She's been doing crazy, amazing stuff. She just trolled the crap out of this racist on MLK Day this year. She got a lot of traction on that. And most recently, and something we're definitely going to talk about with her, she wrote a review of Tina Fey's new Netflix sitcom, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which we're going to try and watch at least one episode of before then, Drew.
Yeah. And y'all remember, we I don't want to say like, I feel like I knew her when. Like, I don't want to quite say like that. But we were introduced to her when she did the
somebody told her she tweeting. Was a white woman.
She was, they said,
and I did a
you're
live
white.
Reading. I we did a live reading of her tweets.
Of her Storify, of her tweets of as being a white woman. It was
they were hilarious.
Absolutely hilarious. And then almost immediately after that, she did the trolling of the MLK racist kid. She had she was in The Guardian with, I think, another story. I can't remember what that was about.
Yep.
But she's done a couple of really high-profile pieces
and
things over the last not even 2-3 months. She's blowing up.
She is. And then
and I stalked her, and I said something about the podcast, and she goes, "Oh, I like it." I said, "Oh, that's it. That's a Twitter contract. You have to come on now." And then you close the deal. So
she's been busy, but I know she. Well, we'll talk about it, all of this with her. But I'm really excited to have her on the show. And then we have our podcast brothers and sisters from up north coming on the show a few days later.
Shonilla.com.
So Shirley and Clove will be in the house, and then we have Black Rob coming on the week after. So it's going to be a really great couple of weeks without just the two of us. It'll be our last solo show for a while.
And I know it's really a source of friction with you, honey. I know, but just
we're in the pipe. 5 by 5.
That sound. That's Clove. That's all Clove. Thank you, Clove.
Well, you can, Clovisaurus! You can praise Clovisaurus when he's on the show.
You know, it's you just got finer little, tiny little improvements. Tiny, yeah. And we're doing it for you, Carl. And the Denzians. The Johnners. And you know what? God damn it. I really, if there's not a 5-star review, I just,
anyways, if I can continue, you can stop now. On Ferguson Response tomorrow, my girl Tia is going to be on the show. We're going to be talking about all news. It's an all news episode. We are not doing a specific topic. I'm considering calling it "Bitch, Y'all Tried It" because everybody seemed to try it this week. But Tia is going to be on, and she is an instructor, an educator, and had a recent Black Lives Matter, shall we say, flare up at her own school that we're going to discuss. It's been literally when I first started talking to her, it was just the Tribune with a photo credit directly to Tia, might I add, in the Tribune. But it's been now picked up. I have seen it on BuzzFeed has picked it up. Yeah, it was in Washington Post. Too. It's been everywhere. So great to talk to her about that.
I'll give you the short review.
White people.
True dat. And then next week's Ferguson Response Network, we're going to have Zeli Imani on, which I'm really excited about.
Awesome.
Really psyched to talk to him.
He's here in New Jersey, too, isn't he? He's local.
I don't know if he's in Jersey. Yeah, I think he's in Princeton, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's going to be really cool. And then most.
Can I come on that show, too?
No. And then most exciting.
You didn't even think about it.
No. And then most exciting of all, you and I, guest. We're going to be guests this Sunday, live, on Insanity Check.
MovieTrailerReview.net.
With Chris Fett. We are so freaking excited. I can't wait. So.
You know, and I feel a little, I don't know, like, I told him, like, I'm not giddy about it. But this is the first podcast. And I say the first because we discovered Chonilla, and because we're, you know, interracial, and we have a podcast.
Sure.
We went on their show almost like, I think we started listening and we're on the show like right away. And then, not to demean their show, like they'll have anybody on, because of course they had us on, but
no, they don't. They're like professionals. They've been doing it for 6 years. They're on the actual radio.
Well, I felt that about being on their show, but Chris's show, I was listening to, I think maybe before even Chonilla.
Yeah. I love Chris's show. I love his reviews. I love him. He's a really great broadcaster, and Insanity Report is one of the best podcasts out there.
And the sound quality.
I honestly, I say it all the time, you know, when it comes to just, you know, in nuanced discussion of news topics, talking about all the pop culture shit that we like to talk about, movies, comic books, TV. He is grade A.
Yeah, it's a good show. He's really good. He's been doing it a while.
Yeah, I'm just super duper excited to be on the show and he invited us, and we cannot wait. So that's going to be live 6 o'clock on Sunday on
the 15th. Streetcast.
You can go to movietrailerreviews.com to check that out, and I have a link in the show notes, and we'll include that. We'll give it a little pump up as we lead up to that live, but you'll see us, our actual faces, on the air. So that's going to be pretty cool.
I'm going to have to go in the other room.
And I am headed next week to the Amnesty International General Assembly meeting in Brooklyn, New York for the weekend. So I'm pretty excited about that. I'm going to be getting my network on. So that'll be kind of cool. And I'll get to see my sisters for a couple of days. What's going on with you, dude?
You know, just work, my day job, my work. I've been busy, but in a good way, you know, making stuff happen. So I mean, we went, I guess, away for the weekend, and I kind of logged off of Twitter and didn't really go on. And I don't want to say it's nice. It's a little bit privileged to be able to just sort of like disconnect in that way. But so I've been trying to get back into my day job, work. But so this podcast is good. I like it. And support you trying to get this house, get sold, get us moved to Michigan.
Get us make it happen. On the road again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Committed.
Well, yes, I said we got a busy couple of podcast weeks and busy couple of weeks generally speaking. Oh, I'm also rolling out hashtag Black March Madness tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that too.
Awesome sauce.
It's going to be really awesome.
I'm going to do the Onyx. I forgot about that.
Did you see that? You're doing that today.
I know.
How do you forget that?
I got to talk to Johnny Silvercloud. We're doing Onyx.
Go ahead. You're doing, what are you doing?
The Onyx Truth Podcast.
And that's live also.
That is live also.
But nah, I think it's just visual. No, you do have to go on camera.
He's using Google. Google Hangout.
Yeah, so that's the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably use your computer.
You should.
I shall.
All right. Well, that's going to be starting soon, so you better get the F out of here. But it's been real. We'll talk to you guys in a few days, and next episode will be with Ennis. And if not, catch Drew on Onyx like in a minute, and catch both of us Sunday night on Movie Trailer Reviews Presents Insanity Report with Chris Peck. We're really excited about that.
Awesome. High five.
That's not why we end the show.
Oh, I did my thing. See, I didn't have it up. Hold on.
Good God.
Good night, everybody.
High five.
I love the bell.
High five.